Hey, thank you, Kane. 806 FM Talk, 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. As we mentioned last hour, we're checking in with AL1's Congressman, candidate for Senate Bradley Byrne, live from Washington as we get the latest from Washington on what happened last night. I guess early in the morning, Iraq-Iran time, late in the evening, our time, with Iran launching missiles into Iraq at bases that housed U.S. troops. We're joined now by Congressman Byrne. Thanks for your time.
Yes, Sean. Good to be with you. Hey, good night.
Yeah, good to have you on. So let's talk about that and what you were hearing in Washington as this went down yesterday, half a world away.
Well, obviously, nobody on our side, at least, knew it was coming until maybe shortly before it happened. We had some heads up, our forces did, and they were able to shelter, it sounds like. We knew something was going to happen, we just didn't know what. Look, this was a direct missile barrage from Iran itself, not from these Iran-supported militias, but from Iran itself. And they attacked two Iraqi bases, not U.S. bases. Now, there were U.S. personnel there, but there were two Iraqi bases that were attacked. And they have enough precision with their ballistic missiles to where if they wanted to hit Iraqi forces or if they wanted to hit American forces, they certainly had the capability of doing it. So far, and there's been over 10 hours of sunlight there in Iraq, so far we have no reports on either the Iraqi side or the American side of any casualties. So if this is their retaliatory action, doesn't look like it's much more than a face-saving gesture.
And that's interesting to hear from you, because I was saying that last night on Twitter. That's what it seemed like to me, that if we're looking at this tit-for-tat, as it's been cliched, this interaction with Iran, that because we can go back, we'll go back to what's happened here recently, especially under the watch of President Trump, but they could have, the idea that they're incompetent and couldn't hit what they were aiming at with the missiles. I find that hard to believe. It seems like they knew better than to actually have American casualties.
Yeah, remember last September that they were able, with their precision weapons, to take out half Saudi Arabian oil production in a matter of minutes. And I was briefed on that. I know exactly what they did there, and it is remarkable what they were able to do. So they have the capacity to strike at us. And here's the problem. They do not have the capacity to defend against our counterstrike if they hit directly at one of our military targets. We will make them pay a very, very deep price, and they know that. And they also know now, because taking out Soleimani is a huge deal, they know our resolve. We took out the most dangerous man in the Middle East, the most powerful man underneath the supreme leader in Iran, and it's a big deal across that whole region. And for their retaliatory strike is to lob a few missiles into some Iraqi air bases that don't really have any human casualties, any injuries. That's not much of a tit for tat. That's just a face-saving gesture.
And that's one thing I think we should think about as Americans, is realize sometimes they're doing things, I'm sure, to either placate or frighten or, I don't know, galvanize their power inside Iran, right? They do something like that. That is more for the home audience.
Correct. There have been lots of domestic uprisings in Iran over the last several months. They've got a huge economic problem. You saw on television the crowds that came out for the various functions for the Soleimani funeral over the last several days. So this is something where if they did nothing, it would cause them more domestic problems, which they can't stand any more of. So they had to do something, but they knew they couldn't directly challenge us, and if they did, that we would hit them with maximum effect, and that would be even worse for them.
Mm-hmm.
So much like you see with a lot of other these dictatorial regimes around the world, it's all about preserving the regime. And hitting us in a major way would have damaged their regime badly, perhaps upended it. And I don't think they were willing to risk that. They had to do something. This is what they did.
Yeah, it was definitely, I believe, calculated on the part of the Iranians, and the fact that it wasn't, one of their surrogates. It wasn't a proxy attacking. They probably needed to make those missiles actually launch from Iran to placate the home crowd.
that and Sean, for a long time, they and the rest of the world have been under this little charade that when one of these Iranian-backed militias does something, it's not really Iran. Well, we have pulled back the cover from that. No more. When one of these militias does something, everybody's going to put their finger directly on Iran, and Iran's going to be retaliated against. So not only have we taken Soleimani out, but we have shifted that narrative completely. So this has changed the calculus in the Middle East for the better from our point of view. But I'm going to say this loud and clear. The United States does not need to be in war with Iran. That is not in our interest. So we need to make sure we make some wise decisions about how we play this pretty strong hand that we've now created for ourselves.
Yeah, I want to move forward in your thinking on that, but circle back for a second. And one thing that I've been disgusted by many in the mainstream media that seem to celebrate or canonize Soleimani. This is a guy. This is not just some rank and file Iranian soldier. I mean, this is a person that's over the political wing, if you would, of their military. We really don't have that here, but a political wing of their military, and somebody who is part and parcel in the deaths of Americans on the battlefield.
Yeah, he's responsible for far more American deaths and deaths of people throughout the Middle East in general than Osama bin Laden was.
Wow,
he was more dangerous than Osama bin Laden. And just think about that for a second. More dangerous than Baghdadi. We just made a major move forward for the cause of peace and stability in the Middle East. Now, you know, that part of the world will blow every opportunity for peace and stability you give them.
Yeah.
But we've just given them an opportunity for peace and stability. Let's see if they're smart enough to take it.
Yeah, I'm wondering then going forward about our response, because I think back to this, and it's you know, people will look at even recent history. We don't have to do a deep dive how President Trump has reacted. For example, the Iranians shoot down a drone, and there were many saber rattlers out there that wanted some major strike back against the Iranians, and President Trump was measured in that. They struck the Saudi oil fields through their proxies, and we were measured in that. So there has been a measure here from President Trump where he is looking not to escalate.
Exactly. He's verbally said that, but his actions have shown that as well. And I think he's been right to do that. But you can't let them attack our forces in Iraq the way they did. You can't let them, and this was Iran that did it, you know, attack our embassy, which is attacking the United States, and we just don't do anything. And we let this guy Soleimani just traipse around the Middle East scot-free. Well, there's a new sheriff in town, and we showed him this new sheriff in town. We took him out. And now the question is not what we're going to do. What are they going to do? And I think that answer is going to come in the next several weeks. Now, I do think, Sean, you and I've talked about this before, I do think that we need an overall strategy for the Middle East that we really don't have right now. What's our end game here, and how do we achieve that end game? You know, the president has verbally said many times, let's just get out. A lot of people in the military have said that's pretty dangerous to do. Well, all right, what are we going to do? Let's make up our minds. I share the president's skepticism, by the way. I really do share his skepticism about our ability to achieve much over there. But I also hear the military saying, hey, we've got to make sure that we have enough elements there to counteract any terrorist incidents. So we may have to have some counterterrorism forces remain in the Middle East. But let's be very clear-eyed. We're not going to build healthy governing democracies in Iraq or Syria or Afghanistan. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's been proven for sure. And so, but an exit strategy, would you call it that? Would it be how you dial down troops? Right now we have increase in troops, obviously, with what's going on in the 82nd Airborne there. But would this be something that would have some kind of timetable for a troop reduction in the region? And does that, by the way, give Iran a win because they're calling for the removal of U.S. troops from Iraq?
No, I think it's a shift in our mission from, as I say, true nation-building efforts to a reduction of our forces there to where it's purely counterterrorism. Now, counterterrorism is more than just whack-a-mole, by the way. There's a lot more to it than that. But counterterrorism efforts just make sure that we don't allow Iraq to become a safe haven for terrorist groups like ISIS, that Afghanistan doesn't become a safe haven group for al-Qaeda, that Syria doesn't become a safe haven for Iranian proxies or for are the bad people. So I can see the counterterrorism effort remaining in that region with our troops on the ground, but it's a much narrower agenda, one that's where we're not trying to fool ourselves about trying to create some sort of a healthy, functioning democracy in countries that clearly don't want that.
Now, I wonder if we bring other of our allies in there and partners in the region, to them to breach the Iraqi border. I don't know how that would, because I'm thinking about the Saudis. I'm thinking about the Jordanians, how they may be able to step in and assist as we kind of let go. They can take a grip.
Well, I'm a little bit skeptical of that, frankly. I mean, that attack on the Saudi Arabian oil fields was an attack on Saudi Arabia. What did they do? Not much.
Nope.
So if they're not willing to defend themselves, I don't know that we can expect them to do much in other countries like Syria or Iraq. But I do think if we go in there and tell them, look, we're going to stop this, you know, ridiculous idea that we're going to do nation building over there. We're going to stand there for counterterrorism purposes. But if you want to remake the Middle East so that there is clearly something that's opposed to Iran that will work, then you've got to take all of your wealth and all of your people and put them directly into that so that Muslims are involved in it and not Americans.
Do you have a second? Can you hold on? Because we've got a news break, but I want to ask you about what's going on in the House right now.
Okay, sure.
All right, coming right back, AL1's Congressman, candidate for Senate Bradley Byrne, joining us from Washington. Of course, talking about the conflict now between the United States and Iran, which you could argue has been going on for 40 years. But what about what's happening in the House and the articles of impeachment? What's that process looking like right now? What's the timeline for the Senate getting this and going forward? We'll talk to Congressman Byrne about that when we return. Y'all stay close. It's FM Talk 106.5. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Continuing our conversation with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, candidate for Senate, and getting some updates here on the conflict from last night. That actually, I guess, Congressman Byrne, we could say that this conflict between the United States and Iran has been going on since I was a wee lad. I mean, this is goes back to the fall of the Shah.
Yeah, Iran considered themselves to be in a state of war with America ever since. Now, the word war has very serious connotations under our Constitution, so I'm not going to concede to them that from our point of view that we're in a state of war with them. But certainly we're in a very heightened area of hostilities. And, you know, we made a major shift last week, and I think it was a shift for the better.
Yeah, it's one that I think if we had become predictable in the region and people already knew the outcome of X, Y, and Z, that whole playbook's been upended by President Trump now.
Completely. And I think people in the region know it. It takes a while for that region to really absorb what things like that mean. But I think they're absorbing it right now, and I think they're looking at that response last night. And I think all of them hope that that's the end of what Iran's going to do. And maybe they'll start acting themselves over there, you know, Arab to Arab, to figure out how to get something straight. Because, as I said earlier, America can't fix this. The Arabs have got to fix this. And this goes back to the end of World War One. I don't want to get into all the historical stuff, but, you know, the Europeans tried to force on the Arab nations, or nations, they didn't even have nations, the Arab people over there, a sort of false set of nations that hadn't worked. And the Arabs have got to settle this. Europeans and Americans can't settle it for them. But we're not going to let, America's not going to let any group over there use any of that property, that land over there, as a safe haven for people to take strikes at the West. We're just not going to let them do that.
And so that, I've heard you say that a couple different times. So in your eyes, our interest there is to prevent there being any safe haven for terrorists and terrorist development. We're out of the business, in your opinion, of trying to build a democratic Iraq or anywhere else in the region.
Yeah. It's time for us to just recognize reality. That didn't work. We spent far too much money on it. It was a waste. If they want democracy and a true functioning government, they need to go do it for themselves. But we do have an interest in making sure that we have counterterrorism actions over there so that at the very least we can suppress these terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and these groups sponsored by Iran like Hezbollah from popping up and doing damage to us or to our interests.
Right. I want to talk about what's going on in the House right now and then look over down the long haul over to the Senate. And where are y'all now on the, I mean, the articles of impeachment? Well, what's the delivery schedule on that? Do you hear anything from the Democrats?
Well, they had a meeting late yesterday, the Democrats did, and Pelosi doubled down on holding the articles of impeachment. So, and this can change any moment, Sean, you know, the way they work over there. They could have some sort of shimmer over in their group, and all of a sudden everything shifts. But as of right now, we don't have any firm timeline for them to bring up this privilege resolution in the House that would name the managers and send the articles over to the Senate. Meantime, McConnell has said, hey, I've got the votes to adopt the rules to do the Senate trial our way. So I don't care what Pelosi says. We're going to do it the way we said we're going to do it, which is just mimicking what they did in the Clinton trial. So she's not accomplishing anything. I mean, she's accomplished nothing, except that after telling us for weeks that we had to impeach the president before Christmas, now we're 3 weeks post-impeachment, and she won't even send the articles to the Senate, which just belies that whole argument she had. Oh, we got to get this done before Christmas. No, we didn't.
Hey, one of the things, help me understand this too, because in some of the discussion I've heard where, you know, what about witnesses in the Senate and all that, we can get into it. Then I heard somebody say the other day that the House could call witnesses again or something that effect. I thought it was finished in the House, or is it still ongoing? What are the rules around that?
Well, there's nothing in our rules to say that you can't impeach somebody twice. It's never happened before.
Huh.
As crazy as it can be. But they could bring up new articles of impeachment. And Adam Schiff was directly asked about that by, you know, some of these news people over the holidays, and he would not rule out the possibility of new articles of impeachment. Now, I can just imagine what those Democratic moderates are thinking about that. I mean, they've caught enough grief about the two articles they've already had to vote on. You bring this up again, and it's just going to be more problems for them. So I can imagine that there are elements of their conference that are saying, no, 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 we don't want to do that. But they've also got majority of their conference that would impeach Donald Trump because he, you know, woke up this morning and sneezed.
That's probably accurate. All right. I want to talk about, I know it's not your gig, although you're looking for it to be your gig, but what's going on in the Senate? A lot being made about the witnesses, and there's not a real trial without witnesses. What's your take on what Mitch McConnell is saying and what Schumer is saying back at him?
Well, back 20 years ago when this was going on with Bill Clinton, they reached, like, 100 people in the Senate voted for these rules that said we're going to go forward with letting the managers present their case, the president present his counter case, and then we'll decide if we need to talk to any witnesses. That's exactly what they did for Clinton, and that's exactly what McConnell has proposed to do with regard to President Trump's impeachment. And Schumer, who actually voted for it 20 years ago, is now saying, no, 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 we don't want to do it that way. Well, phooey, you know. McConnell said, look, if you want to reach this agreement with me, we're going to go forward without you. So, made a complete with regard to what the process is going to be. Now, the one thing that's not a complete is whether after the managers present their case and after the president's lawyers respond, whether there will be any witnesses at all. My guess is that there won't be.
Now, I mean, because there was a big discussion this week that John Bolton may testify, but I don't have a feeling that's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, see, here's my take on this. What have we learned from all these witnesses about the phone conversation between President Trump and President Zelensky that we didn't know the day that the transcript was released? Tell me one thing that we've learned, you know, substantive thing that we've learned that's new. We've learned lots of people's opinions, people's presumptions, lots of hearsay, but what substantively new have we learned? From my point of view, we haven't learned anything new. And what is Bolton going to tell us that we don't already know? You know, if you look at the transcript, you either think that that's a criminal thing for the president to do, or you don't. Hearing more witnesses is not going to change that.
And so getting this started and moved on, looks like you believe that timeline will be, what do you think? Are we looking at something that we're talking about this in the late spring, or is this done before the blossoms start, the leaves start coming out on the cherry trees in Washington?
I just can't imagine that we're going to bring the president over for the State of the Union address the first week or so of February, and this impeachment thing is still going to be hanging over all of it.
Really?
I can't believe they're going to let it go that long. But if it gets much longer than this week, then that is exactly what's going to happen. And that is going to be awful for the country. You know, I know this is bad for President Trump, but it's bad for the country. And I'll say this about President Trump. I think this is actually helping him politically, as painful as it is for him to go through this. But the real loser here is America. We need to get off of this crazy stuff.
There's got to be something here, too, that when the votes go down, as you're running in the Republican primary for Senate, there's going to be a lot of eyes on what the person occupying that office right now, Doug Jones, votes. I mean, that I think there's a lot of people watching that. He's still not committed one way or another.
No, he's saying that, you know, he's a juror and he can't, he's got to keep an open mind. Look, the Senate is not a jury, okay? They don't walk into that room in the Senate chambers to make their decision, having known nothing outside of the Senate chambers about this. That's not what the founders intended. He's not a juror. He's seen the evidence. He's got to have an opinion about the evidence. And, you know, if he thinks it's sufficient to remove the president, he should say so. If he thinks it's not sufficient, he should say that too, but he won't.
That's for sure. We'll watch it. Congressman Byrne, thank you for your time. Thanks for the update, and we'll be checking back with you soon.
Good. Look forward to talking to you.
As always, good talking to you as well. AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne checking in. So there's a little bit on the perspective from Washington on what's happened half a world away in Iraq with the Iranians launching those missiles. We'll talk to you about this when we get back. Do you feel like there's an escalation? Do you think we've reached a new stalemate? Have the Iranians saved face enough that they won't do anything else? And what would your response be if you're President Trump? Because so far he has been very measured in his responses. Think about that. Go back through the drone shoot down and the attack on the Saudi oil fields. That's measured. And you say, well, you've now struck this Iranian general. But that was somebody that was a target of opportunity that we've been wanting to get for a long time. Mm-hmm. So what do you think?
And we'll get President Trump's official remarks this morning at 10 a.m. That's when the White House says that the president will address the nation.
All right. And also our 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Do you think the latest escalation between the United States and Iran will lead to a larger conflict? Vote online. Front page of FMTalk1065.com. Tallying up those votes. We'll talk about those when we get back.